everyone, and welcome to episode 5 of Webinars Unfiltered. I'm Natalie Parsons, the marketing manager here at Workcast. And today we have a slightly different panel than usual. We have got rid of Rachel. We hid the body over Halloween. I'm joking, she's just fine. And we have replaced her with Claire Hodgson, our head of territory for NORAM. Say hi, Claire.
Hi.
Happy to have you here. And as normal, we have Christopher here, who is our sales development manager for EMEA and NORAM. So hey, if you're new here, yeah, I totally skipped over you saying hi.
All right, don't worry about that, Natalie.
Okay, so if you're new here, Webinars Unfiltered is where we take your questions on anything to do with webinars and we answer them from our own perspective, from marketing, account management, and sales to help you figure out the best way forward with your webinars. So the question today, I'm just going to dive right in and read it for you. Is hello, I'm the marketing manager at a medium-sized automotive company and I've been tasked with boosting up our webinar signups. We try to hold one webinar every month or so. They last about an hour. The webinars are usually about helping automotive professionals learn about digital marketing slash increasing their online presence. Any tips on this or interesting tactics you've seen from other companies? We have good email open rates, but not a lot of conversions slash signups with webinars. Note, the main speaker isn't open to having their face shown through our promotions, i.e. video marketing. Thank you so much in advance. So this one seems pretty heavily orientated around how to get more registrations for your webinar, which we're asked quite a lot here at Workcast, I would say. What do you both think?
Yeah, I agree. It also seems to have a twist on getting the registrations, but making also then the follow on to get people actually turning up to watch the live event or watch the on demand. So I think there's a few areas that we can expand upon there.
No, definitely. I think how about we break this down into almost what you can do before the webinar goes live, and then we can look at what happens when people maybe land on your registration page. So once you've got them there, because as we know, you could get quite a lot of views of your registration page, but they might not be converting for whatever reason. And then we can look at the follow-up for after it's live, because the question doesn't necessarily say whether this is just a one-off webinar or if they're continuing to put them out in any other way. So does anyone have any thoughts on what you can do prior to webinar going live, or should I take this one first?
No. So since they've kind of already got good email open rates, and it is trying to like convert the already good open rates, maybe in the emails themselves, that could be where you could really highlight the benefit. Just make it crystal clear in the content, like what are you trying to like achieve with this webinar? Just tell readers just why is this webinar really important? Why is it valuable? What specific insights will they gain? Also as well, if you can, maybe like tailor the messages. So if it's from different people in the car industry, you might have like from like salesman or a mechanic, kind of just like tailor the message to like more relevant to them, some value props that they might find during the webinar for them. And that's how I would generally, because if they've already got good open rates, that's a great starting point for them. It's just trying to like maximize the volume of that email cadence, so that's where I would begin. I don't know if you've got any thoughts on that, Claire.
No, I agree, and actually I think there's two things, and I think Natalie as head of marketing, she and part of her role is on that email marketing, so with the what the content is, so what you're talking about, Chris, the content to get so once they've opened the email, what's in that, the content. And I think, Natalie, you probably can talk about that because there's a few different options. And then I think it's all that content needs to drive people to actually register. And I can certainly talk about what you do when people, you get them to that registration page, because you then are asking them to one click on to actually register and then to fill out the full item to actually register. And then we can talk about other things. So I think, Natalie, your experience on the actual content within that first email, or whether it's other things that you might do, because it's not just email marketing that you can direct people to the registration page. There's lots of different activities like social media and things like that. So I think Natalie's probably actually the better person to speak to on that subject.
Thank you, Claire.
Let's put it out there, just loading it up to you, Natalie.
set up for me to knock it out of the park. So building on what Hopper said about personalization, I do agree with that. But I think a couple of things to keep in mind when you're designing your emails for promoting your webinar is, one, are you changing your messaging for each email you send? How many emails are you sending before your webinar goes live? For example, we send about 4 and we space them out over at least 6 weeks to give people enough time. You might find as well that you might get more registrations if you send your email either the day before or the day of, because people will be like, oh, okay, like I know I will be free in an hour. I know I'm free tomorrow, rather than asking them a month in advance if they're going to be free, because nobody really knows. So on the topic of finding out if you're actually changing the content in each email would be potentially looking at A/B testing your standalone emails. So for example, in your first email, you could have your standard what you would normally send and then do a different version to test, where you could be like a bit more personalization, maybe even try mixing up the format. If you think people aren't going to read this huge paragraph, bullet point it. If you think people want a bit more imagery, put that in, or just shuffle it up and kind of see where you go with it. It could take a couple of rounds to find out what works best for you, and you're going to have to be probably a little bit patient with it. So that's what I'd say for the email side. For social, I'm aware that you said that the main speaker isn't open to having their face shown, which is totally fine. Some people don't like that, especially on the run-up. But is it possible, if you, for example, pre-recorded your webinar, to take a soundbite instead of maybe the visual? And then you can put it almost out in a little soundbite into social instead, being like, oh, like we have, we're talking about this topic on X date. Tune in to find out more. Or for example, you could have countdown posts in the run-up to your event on social. So you could maybe do 3 weeks out, 2 weeks out, 1 week out, day before, day of. It may sound like a lot, but things move so quickly on social that some people will see them, some people won't. Another thing to maybe consider is, if you have budget, can you put anything into paid social? But that's optional. Some people don't have budget, and that's totally fine. So that's what I would say from the email side. One thing that I would add as well, well, for email and social, is we've found quite a lot of success with website banners. So if you go onto our website today, for example, you'll see a banner come up on the top saying, oh, there's a webinar, or like new webinar, the name of the webinar, and then click through to register. So anyone who goes onto our website will see that. And if it tickles their fancy, they can go through and have a look at the registration page. If not, it won't appear again for them. So that's just another way for you to get exposure to people who would be on your website anyway, but may not necessarily go to look at your resources or something like that.
I think that's great, Natalie, because also, could you, on some email providers, you can take those banner and you could put it on an email signature. So say if you're trying to market to an existing customer base, then you're also, you can either have that banner on, say, an internal training website, or just on their email signatures and click through from that.
100%. And I think as well, if you're not sure about like designing something like that, like a banner, Canva is amazing. There's free versions of it that you can use if you want to make your own little email signatures, or you can just make it super simple and just add a little bit of text as well, if that's what you want to do. But yeah, no, email signatures, a really good shout, Claire. Very good shout, especially if you're wanting to get to your current customer base.
So you know, and also you're talking about, sorry, go on.
No, it's fine. It's fine. If you were, I was going to a little different point, but if you were following
I was talking about the content side of things in your emails and mm-hmm. all of that side of things. I suppose the open rates are great, but you need people to, reasons for them to come to. So I think, Chris, you were talking about personalize it, but what kind are there some real great takeaways? So what's the benefit? So one, there's the learning knowledge, but people love physical things. So is it that you could say, if you attend your live event, we will give you this template that you could use, and it, or if you attend, you could have a certificate of attendance that kind of builds up your training, or it could be, if you sign up early and if it's a paid for event, you get a discount on the entry fee. So there's lots of things that you can highlight in the actual email that then goes through to it as well. So again, it's like, what's the little goodie bag that you can have from attending?
Definitely. I love that, especially if it's like, if you get it when you sign up early, just to even get your base numbers a bit higher. I think that'd be really great because, like you said, Claire, everyone likes a little extra something, something just to take away with them.
We all like a little treat, don't we?
We do
it
love
it. Doesn't even have to be much either. It can just be like stuff like a gated resource or like little recording with like some bonus footage. Like, like I said, it doesn't have to be much. Like even just like some toolkit or like a media pack that you already have ready available that you can just put that in there. And little incentives like that really do make a difference. Mm-hmm. What I was curious about, Natalie, how, and you might be good answer, this should have been a one for you. You should have been like, we should have introduced you for this. Because how would you say a title plays a big role in stuff like when you're promoting a webinar?
I think it has a huge impact, actually. And I think you really have to know who you're speaking to. So for example, you want to be able to get across what your actual webinar is going to be about, but you also don't want it to be too long. You don't want it to be too short. You don't want it to be too vague. Otherwise, people aren't going to know what you're going to be chatting about. And this actually links, sorry, going back to email, links well to email. Because if you have a really long webinar title and you want to make that webinar title your subject line, it's going to get cut off halfway. And it won't look right in your in someone's inbox, for example. So you should always test to see what it looks like. But you want to make it catchy. I know catchy is a very kind of cliche phrase to use for this, but you've got to make it something that makes it worthwhile for someone to click through on and to learn more. And it also like hits a pain point that they are having trouble with, I would say.
I like that pain point. Yeah.
Yeah, completely agree. We when we did the podcast, so if anyone doesn't know, like I used to do podcast hosting for about 5 years, and we started with a really small like audience, probably in the scale of just friends. So we had no like emails, email like community that we could like share our stuff to. So what we did is, when we had a key speaker on, we shared the content with their relevant groups to them. So we would search different social media sites, that's like Facebook, with communities that they are mostly active within, and we would be sharing our content as much as possible within them. Not to the point of spamming, just to the point of just really getting the big insight into like what this podcast is all about. And if people registered, fantastic. And 9 times out of 10, we had a great response because people would start tagging their friends in or tagging people who would be relevant for. So in this case, probably be different like motor blogs or different forums for mechanics or something like that in the automotive sector. And that's how I would try and build it up. I know it's a lot more of a manual input than it is an automation, but it can yield great results, especially because if you have a referrer tag on your webinars, you'll get to understand where these attendees are coming from, and it gives you a big insight into that data and analytics of your marketing webinars. So the more webinars you promote in the future, the more you gain understanding, I should be promoting here or there or in this section here.
Yeah, but also you can see for future, can't you, if you're using those referrer tags, you can say, well, actually it did really well on this campaign. It's a bit like Natalie's AB testing, but it didn't do well on this one. And so you can then kind of, so you can start to drill down and go, why didn't this work as well? Let's tweak it. Let's try this. Let's try that. So I think the data behind it, and as things goes back to Natalie saying, sometimes it can take time, but it's worth it in the long run by having data behind the open rates and things like that. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Natalie.
Really, no, I was going to say really quickly for anyone who doesn't know what a referrer tag is, it's a little bit that you put onto the end of your registration URL. And then when you send out that registration URL, it could be on, an email, it could be on social, or it could be on something that Chris has just mentioned, which could be on a forum if you put it in there. If you put onto the end of your registration URL and refer equals email one, LinkedIn that will pull into Workcast, and you'll be able to see where they've come from. So I just want to quickly explain that in case anyone didn't know what that was. But just a thought as well, from what Chris said, there may or may not be, like, for example, a professional body within your industry that sends out newsletters. See if you can get put in that, because that'll go out to everyone, and see if you can get tagged in that. But I agree with what you've said, Claire, as well, about reporting being really important. Like, follow where the data says you're getting most from, because there's no point putting lots of effort into something where you're not getting much return from it. It'll just be a little bit of a waste of time and efforts, because nobody likes that. Nobody likes that. Okay, so I think that's maybe covered what you can do in the lead up to a webinar if you're just doing it purely live. So Claire, I think you might have some thoughts here, because I know you do a lot of work with our clients, on what you could do to maybe improve your registration page experience to help people convert once you've managed to get them onto a registration page.
Yeah, no, and exactly it is. You've got them onto the registration page. You now actually want them to go through and do the full process. So there's a few things. One, try not to have too many things that your registrant has to fill out, so form fields. You don't need to know everything about them. It's normally email address, and you might just want the industry, first name, last name. Other information that you may want further down the line, because you might want to know, would they be interested in signing up for this, or what, that type of thing. Those are things that you could gather data further down the line. You just want them to put in as little information as possible, because it's less time and they're more likely to go through. But if you put 6 million form fields to fill in, people are going to get bored halfway through, or they're going to go, I don't want to give my telephone number because I'm just going to get nuisance calling. So that those types of things are going to completely put some people off. Reminding people of those call to actions. So you're going to have the opportunity to ask a question. You can put a box in beforehand to say, could you submit your questions before for the live event? So then the presenters will have them. So that one's quite good, because you then go, well, actually, I know I've asked this question. It's really key to me. I'm going to more likely get it answered. So more, again, people are more likely to return. If you do have those takeaways and things like that. So if you think an industry average for people converting to registrating and attending, you might be looking at 30-40%. But if you add some kind of e-learning element to it, you'll find that your conversion ratios again increase. They might be 50-70%. So again, it's making sure that that tailored message and that the call to actions are relevant, and reminding people about them. But then once you have got them to register, it's about reminding people. So once you've registered, you need an add to calendar, and it needs to be a simple, quick and easy, and it has to be everything. There's some providers out there that might only give you Microsoft, and you're like, but actually I use Google or Yahoo or whatever, or Apple. So you need every option there, and it just needs to be a quick button that does that. And then the same as what Natalie was saying, when you're doing the email marketing, remind people you've got the emails going out maybe 3 or 4 times across that period. But if they've registered, you also need to remind them. They may have added it to the calendar, but they may not have. So remind them again. So send some reminders. You could send a reminder a week before, or you could do one a day before, or 1 hour before. And again, tailor that. So make sure that you've got that your subject line is event starting in 1 hour, that type of thing. So it's all about tailoring them. But quick, easy things. And what's also great is if you've got, we've just brought it out actually, being able to customize those emails. So you might want to have a different message if you're doing a reminder 1 week before, and then a slightly different message to 1 day before. So you want a platform that will just allow you to tweak those messages very simply and very easily on that. And again, you don't want to oversubscribe to them. So you don't want to batter them with too many, but it does need to be time specific and relevant, And again, what you were saying, Natalie, about the email title, make sure, sorry, the event title, make sure it's not too long, because otherwise that's just not going to come into their inboxes, really.
I love all of that. I think especially what you're saying there about it being specific and relevant. Specific and relevant?
I think that's what I said. Yeah.
Yes. Like, we that definitely combined together. I was like, yes, I fully agree with what you're saying. No, I love that, because I think sometimes people forget that, for example, if they've got the open rate in the email, but then they've got the click-through rate that they want, that they need to actually convert on the landing page or the registration page. So I think everything you've covered there is really useful for someone who may be a step ahead of this person as well, who's like, I'm getting them there, but they're just not converting on the page. So I love what you've said about the form. I love what you've said about the reminders, because I think you're totally right. Like, some people, especially the calendar invites, people can forget, people are busy, and that's totally normal. Lovely. Okay. So I think we could move on to another section that I think would be really helpful for us to talk about. And that is what I think we'd all collectively would agree would be quite important, would be an on-demand element. If I said the statement to both of you now that people sometimes put too much waiting on the performance of a live webinar, maybe then they should, and some of it should be shifted to be shared with an on-demand element, would you agree?
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. I think there's so much more emphasis now on on-demand content than ever before. I mean, we are literally in the space of Netflix. Everything's on demand. Everything's already available. But yet people are still talking to each other about the content, about, like, in this case, what on Netflix. And it's still not just like, oh, did you watch that program at 9 p.m. last night kind of thing. It's like, yeah, I can watch it at my own convenience. It's a lot more readily available. And I can then just, you can also just, like, recharge that content as well. So, like, repurpose it in this case, digital marketers in the automotive industry. You can start to, like, maybe, like, change out, like, the resource page, or like the description and stuff like that, putting a little bit more relevant information in that you might think future audiences might actually want. So yeah, repurposing all that content is really valuable, and it actually leads to stuff like similar to Netflix, webinar libraries. So you can really have, like, a whole place dedicated to your on-demand content that makes it easily accessible for every attendee. And it just gives, like, the audience a nice view of, like, your webinars, but it makes it a lot more easy for you to actually, like, navigate your own webinars and go, you know what, I'm going to repurpose this one. I think that's absolutely brilliant for, like, for my digital marketing campaign this year. So little ideas like that, but on-demand content, I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's really relevant. Yeah. And I'm sure Claire has a lot to say on it as well.
Yeah, I was going to spin it back over to you, because I want to pick your brains on CPD.
Okay.
Webinars, because I know earlier on you mentioned certificates as a little kind of teaser of, like, if you sign up, you can get a certificate for attending for this. So I'd love to pick your brains on how someone could, for example, who does do one every month for about an hour to help educate people, how that could build into CPD learning webinars.
Well, I think, again, if you are pushing, so if you do just straightforward marketing and it's a sales thing, you will not get as high a conversion ratio. But if you are putting yourself out there as a thought leader and an expert in your field, which is what that's what they're looking to do, you're building up that experience. And then if you can, yes, you can have all sorts of things when it comes to CPD, like having certification, but you can also use it as a training thing. You can use really great polling options. We have something which you can have graded questions, so you can actually go, are you understanding this, are you not? And then, so you can actually go, it's not a free-for-all, you have to listen to this content and you have to interact with the content before you gain your certificate. And if you have people interacting, they're more likely to take that information in, and then they're more likely to come back again to future events. So, and again, as what Chris was saying, have, like, a if you do a program of it, then can you market, push people to other events? And I think that's, again, how do you then, so you're talking about email marketing. I'm going off script here a little bit, but there's other things that you can do to promote your next events. So for example, if you're running a live event and you've already got your page up for your next event, push that out at the end of the event because you have a closed audience and get them to sign up for it there. And then they're like, this content's brilliant. And go, right, we've got another event in 3 weeks' time. I want to sign up for it now. So you've got a closed audience, so you could do it that way. Other things is repurposing content, what Chris was talking about. I'm jumping around here just because it's on my brain. And we were
Go for it.
And we were talking about on-demands before. Other platforms and Workcast, you can very easily create and apply captions to on-demand. So that makes it a lot more accessible to everybody. But when you apply captions, you would normally get a transcript of that. They're so easy to take that written transcript, put it through some AI tool and repurpose it and create different blogs for it. And then in those blogs, again, put that you said, this is a great blog. Why don't you sign up for our next event? That's so great content. And you can pushing that. So instead of it just being an email campaign, you are making the most out of the content that you've created in that webinar by either repurposing and going, here's the on-demand again, let everybody watch it if you've missed it, etc. But actually, let's take some of that content and put it as a blog and promote it a certain way, or take snippets of it like an audio snippet like you were talking right at the very beginning, nice teaser, be interested in the sign up for our next event because it, or the speaker's on this event, so you've got continuity for it as well. So yeah, there's lots and lots of ways that you can take content. And again, if once you've created the content, you can even do Simulives as well. So you can promote, they're brilliant, Simulives. If nobody knows what they are, our terminology is, you've got great recorded content, but you're just going to schedule it to go out in 3 weeks' time. You don't need to be there. Your audience don't need to be there, but you can still gather all of the information and you can still have CPD polls, questions, or you can still gather certificates. So webinars don't have to be as time resource heavy if you utilize the content correctly and you can then repurpose it. Does that make sense?
No, that makes total sense. Like, I think collectively.
I don't know if that answered your question. I think I went on a tangent a bit there.
No.
You we love tangents.
The CPD part, which I thought was great, because I think, especially for the education thought leadership part, I think it works well for the person who's asked this question. However, with the CPD, like repurposing into blogs, other content, things like that, I think that's really good because I think what we're almost trying to encourage people to do is close the loop here. And like you were saying as well with if you've got people in your webinar, in the auditorium, whether wherever you're hosting it, promote the next one in there. Like, I think that's a very clever idea because like you said, you've got a closed audience. They're there. They're probably already interacting with your resources. You could signpost them away, which also makes me think, Claire, of something else that is a capability of it's at the end of a webinar, you can redirect them to another page. I know a lot of people use that for surveys if they want to get feedback, but you could just redirect them if you wanted to your next webinar registration.
Exactly, page. And that's the whole purpose. So you can either have the link in a resources area. Great, because the likes of Workcast, you have tracking, so you can see who's then clicked onto that page and then have they fulfilled and gone through the process. But that redirect at the end, yes, either direct them off to you sign up for your next event or get a survey filled. And also at the end of the survey, you can go, do you want to sign up for our next event? Or do you want to sign up to be a member of our institution or whatever? So there's so many different ways that it's that journey, isn't it? And just making sure it's looping back all the time. So never have an end point. Always make sure that you're continuing the journey and you're moving on to other things. And if they're doing, say that, the person that sent in this question, they're doing an event a month. And we typically, the build and marketing process of events, it's at least a 3-month process, really, So you know.
Sorry to interrupt, Claire. You paused for me there, so you might need to go back 5 seconds.
Oh, I am so sorry about that. So I was basically just kind of saying that the process for creating a webinar is on average, say, 3 months.
Yes.
And if you're doing one a month, you're probably working on about 3 events in a given period. So make sure that you don't see them as endpoints, that there's always a journey. You're always looping back to the next one. Or again, for your live event, and they were like, well, if you're interested in other events that we've seen, here's our on-demand content. And it can go back to the likes of a webinar library or that Chris was talking about. So it's always making sure that you're just directing people to the next thing or reminding them about the thing that they may have missed all the time.
I think that perfectly summarizes it. This is Angus, my dog, barking. It happens every episode.
Does Angus ever come onto screen? Is he?
He has come on once or twice. I'll grab him for the audience.
Most audiences love. I mean, if yeah.
Angus, come here. Here we go.
Oh, for the audience, Angus, you are beautiful.
Here we go, everyone. Angus, my dog.
That's another tip. If you can include animals in any event, I think that's a winner as well. But I don't think that's a muck.
Really? He's the 4th member of our panel.
Yeah.
I should really add him to the speakers.
Oh, yeah. And have him as a little headshot. One. Brilliant.
I think I might. So, yeah, final tip, add your pets. Awesome. So I think that covers multiple different points I think people could take away from how to boost your registrations. Does anyone have anything else they'd like to add as a kind of final thought, or the one thing that you think they should do is an absolute must for this, if you had to pick one?
Oh, you've pulled that one out of nowhere, haven't you? I don't know. Chris, let's put the focus onto you, because I did a lot of talking there before, so I think it's your turn.
Chris, what would be your one thing? You're on mute. You did this last
time. That is like literally, I think I had like, I was wondering what, yeah, this is on, right? Yeah. I was just saying, Claire, I think you need to get some saliva back in your mouth after that one. No, there's actually so much. We've covered off so much different value, but like I said, my original point was like with the already getting good email open rates, capitalize on that, because that is sort of so much like that's where you're going to get your first initial like hit. That's where you're going to like drive your audience growth, your registrants, and just getting them emails right, just adding up little snippets. Try and put some like video elements in your marketing as well, like even like teaser points can really make such a difference. Doesn't have to be much, like a 30-second like clip, and can just do so much. Also try and like just really like build out the marketing element, as such as Natalie's said, like try and go for like not just like a 1 month period of like marketing, try for 2 months. Really test like the waters with like these emails and see what's possible. That's what I would say.
What do you think, Claire?
I still think that loop, so making sure that you are always thinking of where else you can promote, and I think that's what it would for me. What other things can you add that link to for the registration page? Because email marketing is not just, it shouldn't just be one channel. You should be marketing across multiple channels. And I think that's it. That's my one thing.
I like that, because both are really good. I think the one I'd probably go for as a starting point, and this is assuming that they're not just doing email marketing and that they can track where their registrations are coming from, would just be getting your refer URL as a baseline to see where you're starting from. Because you don't know if they're all coming from email, I'd say, at this point.
Good point.
So get your baseline, and then I'd definitely implement both of yours and then see where you get from there. And reevaluate. Nothing is ever done. Always room for improvement.
Exactly.
We always leave a wisdom tip at the end, Claire.
A wisdom tip. I like that wisdom tip. We should always evaluate. So how often would you, is there a timeline? So would you do it every 3 months, every 6 months, or is it just depends?
I think it depends on the company that, the size of your company and the size of your team, I would say. Because if you're a small team, you might not have the resources to evaluate every 3 months, unless you have really nailed down what you do as your 3 month checklist or your 6 month checklist. But I'd say at least 6 months. Or yeah. Again, it depends how frequently you run your webinars. This person does it every month. So
if you start collecting the data, you've got information that you can start to evaluate. If you haven't got the data, you've got no benchmarking there. So yeah.
I was about to say, and then you'd be doomed, but that's quite a catastrophic way to end this, isn't it?
A little over exaggeration on the doom part there.
You'll be fine.
Just but always think this. I was just come back from holiday, and we went to Lanzarote, and we had a lovely person on the plane, but they were very nervous at takeoff, and they were very much, oh God, I'm trapped on this plane for 4 hours, and we're like, we're all doomed, and it reminded me of Dad's Army, who says all of that. But the point is, we weren't doomed. We had a full holiday. We flew back. It was brilliant. So nobody's ever doomed. There's life always moves on.
I love that. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And that could be your other bit of wisdom for this episode. I'm going to build that as an official element, Hopper. Right. Was it words of wisdom? Wisdom tips? I think it was wisdom tip.
I think it was.
Now sounds like wisdom teeth. So because we're now going into wisdom,
it's ruined.
Wrap this episode.
It's doomed.
Are we really going to put this out live for people? They're just going to think, oh my goodness.
This is unfiltered, unedited, Claire.
Love it. Love it.
This is more polished than we normally do it, I must admit.
I think if we have anybody who's watching this, if they would like to then send in some of their wisdom tips, I'd be very interested. Their life hacks, wisdom. I'd love.
Not wisdom teeth.
Not wisdom teeth.
Posted in the mail to our
Oh my God, that's disgusting. That's rank. No. I don't want wisdom. No.
Well, the people behind Workcast, as usual, unfiltered. On that note, thank you both for coming and joining me today and answering this question with me. I'll invite you both next time to answer
another. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, everyone. See you next time.